This latest podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Focal USA and the Counselor on Queen West. Also, be sure to register your email address on our website, centeroflousenation.com, for all our weekly updates directly to your inbox.
Welcome to another episode of the Center of Loose Nation podcast. This is your host, Pat LaRusso. I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Sergio and Anthony. Welcome, gentlemen, to another podcast. How have you both been?
Go ahead, Serge.
I've been good, Pat. Thank you very much. Trying to keep busy. A little under the weather last week, but other than that. And I feel tired as hell today because I shoveled snow.
Yes.
More than 3.5 hours worth of it.
Oh, isn't that great, eh?
Nice wet packing snow.
Canada, gotta love
that.
My
snow blower did absolutely nothing with. So yeah, we got dumped on. That's okay though.
That is okay. And Anthony, how about yourself?
Life is good here. Got back from California a couple of weeks ago. Spent the Christmas holidays in California, so it's been a while since I've been on the podcast. So it's great to be back.
Yeah,
nothing but amazing watching Californians in 15, 16 degrees Celsius weather. Bundle up with hat and gloves and a scarf.
It is quite unique. So I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you gentlemen, but I lived in Mexico for 2.5 years back in 04 to 06. And I remember days getting like to like 5 degrees, 10 degrees. And I'm being just like a nice like hoodie or something and just, you know, jeans. And everyone looking at me like I was like an alien. And like, they're all bundled up and they're like, you know, they have like 10 layers of blankets on their beds. It's like, still comfortable, people.
Yeah.
But exactly. I guess it's all relatively, right? Like, I guess it's all relative. So
if you would have stayed there a little bit longer, your blood would have continued to thin out and it would have been really cold for you too. But that's the difference, right?
So the like, one,
our blood is thicker than theirs.
The one, I don't call this side effect, but the one really funny thing was when I first came home the first 6 months, all the food tasted bland because I was so used to everything being spicy. Like even their candy has spice.
Right.
And I'm like trying to eat pasta. And I'm like, give me this, like, just pack it on. Like the more heat, the better. So, but that was
jalapeno, good time. My friend, jalapeno. They put
exactly,
it
exactly.
All the peppers.
Speaking of hot peppers and things that are really hot now in Leafs Nation, you know, a couple names definitely are right off the charts. Timothy Liljegren and William Nylander. Both have had interesting career arcs. More specifically, Timothy Liljegren. Because I think that there was a, you know, when you look at since his draft year, how few games he played, you know, part of it with injury. And then what, 3 years almost with COVID, or two and a half seasons with COVID. So to kind of now see him get his game legs, we're starting to maybe see what all the scouts had envisioned for him just prior to his draft year. And unfortunately, you know, speaking of missing a draft, you know, the actual draft year with mono, but we're starting to see some of that of him. Before we go into kind of the mechanics and what we're seeing from him, I want to kind of get just like a high level opinion and thoughts of what you've seen of him this year. Or even just over last year.
Sure. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ant. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, what has he been so far? He has been solid, right? Steady, unspectacular, but solid, steady. I think he's doing what he has to do. I heard some interviews today about his game and how they've asked him to go down to the minors and actually change his style, right? So he's adapted to what the coaching staff has told him that, you know, he's needed to work on over the last couple of years. So I mean, this is a group project. I give Sheldon Keefe and the entire coaching staff a lot of credit on this one too, right? You have to draft and you have to develop, and this is so far so good for the Leafs on this one. You know, he's not making a lot of money. I don't think he's a star, but he is solid, and he complements Morgan Riley really well too, because he's playing with Morgan, isn't he?
I think the last couple games, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has
he's
been. He has
some
been, right?
With him, but
right, yeah, and it's been great because what I haven't heard on those shifts, or when they give up a goal, is, well, Riley's caught, right? So the odd, I mean, I would like to hear about the number of odd man rushes when he's on the ice, right? So it's been unspectacular, but it's been exactly what they need right now. Steady.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. And I mean, unspectacular in the sense that, I mean, he's not dynamic offensively. I don't know if that exists in his game, truly, to be honest with you, because I think that's part of the changes that they would have tried to implement a couple of years ago. I think what's really, really important with Liljegren is the fact that his development effectively came under the watch of Sheldon Keefe. You know, that's kind of where it started, at least, before Keefe had come up, you know, after Babcock's firing. And I think that under the tutelage of Sheldon, you know, that game has continued to rise. A lot of it also, I think we can give, I don't want to say a lot of it, maybe that's overstating it, but a big helping hand to Gio, you know, in the minutes that he played with him last year. So being able to be paired with a veteran of that elk, you know, that experience, I think really, really helped catapult Liljegren's game into this year, where a lot of his minutes early this season was not with Mark Giordano. Like, you remember that the kids were playing together for a rather long stretch, him and Sandin, and not looking out of place one iota in the time that they were playing together. I love Liljegren. If you listen to my side chats and when I talk about this guy, I really, really like him. And this is and I'm going to use your word, Ant, it's a steady guy. And I think steady is very, very important in today's NHL, because not everybody can be rushing the puck like Riley does. Because if you have six of those, you're in trouble. Like, I mean, like, that's the reality, right? So, yes. Someone's got to play defense. So I think that Liljegren is quickly cementing himself as what's going to be a very, very long career of playing top four, possibly even a top pairing defenseman. And we cannot ignore the fact, and I think this is probably the most important thing, he is 23 years old. 23. And I don't think that that probably gets enough of a pat on the back, because there's a lot of defensemen in the NHL that are not relevant yet at 23 years old. It's a position sometimes that takes time. And for a guy he hasn't played a lot of games.
No.
Like, we have talked with, even in the minors, because of injuries, he did not get, you know, like this wasn't the case that Liljegren had 300 games in the minors before he came up to the NHL. I don't believe that's the case.
No.
You know, I don't have the game stat in front of me, but I know that there were a couple of seasons where injuries played a factor there.
Injury and COVID.
And COVID, that's right.
And COVID. And COVID. So to that point, Sergio, like, mm-hmm. I pulled up my blog that I had written on Timothy Liljegren and sent it, because I knew the games that he played would factor into this conversation.
Right.
So from the 2019-2020 season to the 2020-21 season, he had played only 74 games. So obviously that's injury, and then COVID hit. So right. Like, all of those, like, three seasons are pretty much wiped out in the AHL. Since being drafted, the most he's played in one season was 44 games in the AHL. Like, I don't think we know who he is yet, but we're starting to get a glimpse of it, right? And to your point, Sergio, he's 23. Most defensemen in today's NHL don't come up until 24, 25, in some cases 26 years old. Like, defensemen and goaltending almost go hand in hand. Like, those are the longest developmental arcs you'll see in the NHL. Like, forwards, generally, you know what you have almost right off the hop. But with defensemen and goaltending, it does. There's that sweet spot where you have to wait to, like, their mid-20s to really know what you have. And we might be just touching the iceberg of what Liljegren can be.
Yeah, we don't know what the arc here truly is. But if this is it for the rest of his career, you've ended up
He's an Anton Stroman at the end of the day. Solid top four really defenseman.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Very,
that's a good comparison. Yeah, that's a really good comparison. What I like about it, the fact though, too, is that we're talking about him after he has actually had a series of games where he's been productive. So he's the one providing the storyline. He's the one who's setting the narrative.
Yes.
You know, he's not some star that we've deemed the next one. And oh no, he's an amazing prospect, blah, 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 blah. He's actually put in the work. The organization has put in the work. And now you're seeing some of the results of that, right? So that's why the analysis now is a lot more objective than I would say in the past of how we kind of project young Leaf players. So it's nice to see this growth.
But the problem is, and I don't know if you two gentlemen will agree, but this market, from the ownership to media, right down to us fans, we quit on players very easily. And there was a loud vocal portion of the media and fan base last year, even the year prior, that were ready to cast this kid off in any trade possible.
Right now he's a perfect fit, right? What's he making, $1 million?
A couple million.
Okay.
But even put aside the salary.
Perfect.
Yeah, put
it's
away.
It's the style of play that is a perfect fit for what is needed here. The salary is a bonus right now.
Yeah.
And it's a short-term thing, right? Because it's a bridge contract. So him and the one that Sandin eventually took, which was the same deal, after thinking that he was worth more, or his agent really pushing for it. But it's a bridge, and it's the bet on yourself contract. And if Liljegren continues the way that he's playing and matches this play next season, he's going to play himself into a $5 million a year long-term contract or somewhere in that range. And good for him, right? But the production that you're getting here and the development, it's so important.
Yes.
What the Leafs have done with those two defensemen, and I'm not going to cast Sandin aside because I think that he's important too here. The Leafs have developed a couple of defensemen. This is something that this organization hasn't done in a long time.
Yes. And Thomas Cabrera being the last?
Well, Riley, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, so, Riley. My bad.
And here's the point that I'm going to get to. Look, I don't want to make this a crap on Riley discussion, but the reason why the Toronto Maple Leafs had to renew Riley's contract when they did, quite simply, is because in the time that Riley was drafted, to basically two seasons before maybe when you could have traded him, the organization was unable to draft and develop another defenseman. Had they developed anyone else in that time, the Leafs could have possibly said, okay, we've got some riches right now. Maybe we don't need to re-sign the 28-year-old defenseman for 7 years. And they could have looked a season sooner to perhaps move Riley, utilize something with that asset. The Leafs were forced into that contract. And that is a contract, probably one of the few that Dubas has signed, that I know is going to look, it kind of looks like shit now. All right. I'm just imagining 2 years from now, when this guy gets, a little bit older, maybe the wheels slow down a little bit. So the offense isn't really as dynamic. Well, he doesn't play any defense. So I think it's important right now to give credit to this particular management team and the coaches and the staff, much like you said, Ant, that they've been able to take two defensemen here, two young guys, and actually bring them along and develop them and turn them into good NHL quality defensemen right now who are just starting their careers,
Anthony, your thoughts?
I'm sorry, guys. What I'm thinking about is growing up as a kid and hearing about these great young Leaf defensemen that were coming up. And I'm going to show my age, but, Gary Nyland and Ally Frady and Jim Benning and all these players that were coming up in the years gone by. And it's like, I'm 50 years old and we can finally talk about two or three or four, a handful. And right. I get it. It's not easy, but yeah, this is like I said before, this is exactly what we need. Enjoy it. Again, let's not make him a Norris candidate,
no.
Anytime soon, but he fits a hole. He fits a need. And I don't think this, I guess my other question would be like, does this change what you're thinking, Dubas via trade deadline? Like, does he feel better about his decor now? Does it shift focus at all?
Oh, you just dropped the bomb, because I was going to wait for that for the end of this conversation. since we're going to fast forward a bit, that I don't know how it can, right? Like, if you look at, so here's how I look at it. I don't think you can look at the development of Liljegren and Sandin in a vacuum. I think you have to look at where the Leafs' weaknesses were the last three playoffs, and it wasn't on defense. So if you take what we know from the Columbus, and Sergio, I see you smiling because I you know where I'm going with this.
Right.
If you look at the last three playoff series, Columbus, Montreal, Tampa, look at the pivotal games in those series. And there's a common thread that sows itself in all three of those series. It's number one, power play, special teams, dry as a desert. Two, no supplemental offense outside of the top six. And you know what? I know on this podcast we've you know we're ready to trade Kerfoot, but in that Columbus series with Nylander, he was one of the top two forwards.
Speeding the
puck. He played a top six role, Nylander.
Yeah, because of you know because of injury and whatever, he got to play a little bit you know higher up in the lineup, but he produced right. So, but we wouldn't go back to those series. It's the scoring. So I'm looking at these young kids. Do they patch a hole? Yeah. Do they have enough veterans now in the system, like a Jordy Ben, and you know maybe they bring in another seventh or eighth defenseman. Maybe like ideally, I like Luke Shen. I kind of have that, you know, someone just to kind of have as a bigger body.
I'm anti Shen, but that's
but can fine. Like can he shelter Sandin on that bottom too? You know, does Gio shelter?
Well, someone's got. I get where you're going in terms of it shouldn't be a primary focus. It could be a secondary focus. Can you bring in someone who's going to shelter one of the kids if you're separating them? Much like I believe the line combinations have been recently, albeit yes. Brody's out of the lineup, and I think that's
because I think Brody needs to go back to Riley. Like, it's and I think it's to Riley's benefit, right? Like, it's not to Brody's. It's definitely to Riley's benefit, and then we need to figure out what to do with Liljegren. And I can't, I just it'll just kill me if they have to spot him with Justin Hall.
Well, no, because they're both playing on the right side, so I don't think that's going to happen. So I think ultimately what you're looking at here in an ideal scenario, the Leafs are fixed on the left side. When you look at Riley, Sandin, and Gio, put them in whatever order that you want to put them in. Assuming a healthy Brody comes back onto the right side, Liljegren is there, and as of right now, Justin Hall is there. Or I feel that if you were going to make an upgrade in the upgrade, where the upgrade should happen, it's how do you get Justin Hall out of the lineup?
Yeah.
The answer isn't to put in Jordy Benn. It's not some monumental upgrade to do that. Connor Timmins, maybe somewhere down the road in the future. I don't want to see that guy get playoff minutes. In the time that he's come into the lineup, he's looked good on some nights, exposed on others, clearly did not work with Morgan Riley. My Lord, was that,
yeah, that was a
horrific game to watch, right? But, I mean, that's a young piece that we can talk about, you know, in the tomorrows, not necessarily for today. If you're going to go acquire a veteran, ideally the way that you would be putting the pairings in the playoffs, I guess, is reuniting Liljegren with Gio because of that time spent last year, even a little bit of time this year. Brody playing with Riley, and then finding a right-hand D to play with Sandin to replace Hole in the lineup. Like that's the
idea.
I don't like Shen. I don't like Shen because his defensive metrics suck. He throws the body. It's very, very important. I get that, right? But overall, defensively, he's not good. So when people point that out, that I've got to bring that guy in to this team, that we're supposed to have Stanley Cup aspirations. Yeah, but he played with Tampa last year. Yeah, he got in six games in the playoffs. So he was basically their seventh defenseman. So if I'm bringing in Luke Shen to be our seventh defenseman, so he's replacing Jordy Benn, there's no upgrade there. The issue comes down to, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, in terms of draft picks and tradable assets for the Leafs, they do not have enough bullets, in my opinion, to make two impact trades. And that's the one thing that I will regurgitate a lot. So where are they going to take the swing, or where should they take the swing? And Anthony and I have spoken about this off podcast many times. We're in line with this, very simpatical with the idea. Go find the best skilled player that you can find out there that plays with some of those other intangibles, right? So we're not just like, don't go acquire Malgin because he's a skillful player, right? But the guy, you know, plays like he's 5'8". You know, we're that's not what we're asking for. But there's enough names out in the market that have experience, that play a little bit heavier, that are actually skilled. And that's the guy that we need to, like, if you want to talk about increasing your third line, you don't do it by going to acquire another third line player. Go acquire someone's legitimate top six player and see if he can play on your third line.
Slot him down.
That boosts it.
Yeah, but you got to lift the floor, right? I think that's where, you have to raise the floor.
Yeah.
And play musical chairs.
Yeah. But that's exactly what you need, right?
And don't be afraid to play musical chairs. And that's very important too. Pat, last time you and I spoke and we spoke upon it here, I bitched at the fact that this coach, okay, and this goes back to the beginning of the season, is very reluctant, especially even in the top six, just to shake up those four forwards. Okay. It's like, no, I got to go Matthews and Marner forever and a day. And then finally he made the switch to put Nylander back with Matthews, Marner with Tavares. And then the other night I'm like, holy shit, he made a change after the first period.
Yeah.
Because they had a really bad first period, not against the Rangers, it was the game before. And I'm like, okay, wow. You know, like that's not something that Keith has done, but it goes to the, don't be afraid to play musical chairs with your best players, because they've all played together enough that you should be able to do those things in games, make adjustments. And I was happy to see it.
But as a coach, like if I'm looking at the lineup with Keith, I think maybe his hesitancy was when you look at the bottom six, it's like, how do I, like, what chairs can I move there? Like, offense goes to die with Kerfoot. Engvall, you know, Sergio, you and I've had this conversation, and I'm sure you and Anthony have had this conversation offline as well. He has no shot. He can play physical. His defensive numbers are through the roof. Same thing with Kampf. Love him defensively, but offense goes to die.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know about physical for Engvall, but there is a spot for that type of player in this lineup.
Yeah.
There isn't, and this goes back to stuff that we've regurgitated. There's not a spot in the playoffs specifically for those three guys to continue playing together.
Yeah.
And Kerfoot for me is the easiest fix because his defensive metrics are not as high as Engvall's. He's not very good in the center position. We forced him there for a few games, right? On the fourth line, whatever. Do you know what I'm saying? See, he is a winger truly. And he's a winger that there's no tenacity. There's not enough finish in his game. So he doesn't bring enough skill and he doesn't bring enough defense and he doesn't play with any heaviness. It is the number one player that I have screamed that come playoff time, I better not see that guy in my lineup. Because if he is, then it is a colossal failure by this general manager to not go out and address it.
So what are we looking for then? We're looking for what on this team? Depth on the third line.
Yeah, I say like a bottom end, second line center, second line winger, where maybe when it comes April, that you can look at his playoff pedigree and say that you can throw that guy over the board to, you know, get you 10 or 15 goals. Like I personally, and you know, maybe the injury has scared some people off. I like Ryan O'Reilly. Like I think he brings a little bit of the sandpaper. We know he can produce when the games get tight and get more physical, you know, or Jonathan Toews. Like the asking price for Jonathan Toews isn't all that high, right? So maybe if you're only looking at trading a second or a third round pick or a combination and you don't have to give up a Matthew Nyes, then doesn't that still leave some extra bullets in your chamber to make another move?
What bullets do they have?
Matthew Nyes.
Okay. And a first.
And a first or second, third round pick.
Topping Yamela is another defenseman that's probably got named a little bit. Another prospect of theirs. Yeah. At the end of the day, Ant, look, here's the reality. You don't know what other GMs covet on your team. Now, this is not me suggesting that the cupboard is full for the Leafs, but there could be prospects there that we're not even talking about that maybe the GM of the Anaheim, I'm just throwing out random names right now, like the maybe Columbus likes or the Ducks like, that are not named Matthew Nyes. Matthew Nyes is not getting traded. First off, I don't think he's getting traded, but I don't even think Matthew Nyes can't come into a conversation unless it's like we're talking top line player from another team. Yeah. Timo Meier in San Jose would command a Matthew Nyes plus picks and God knows what else in a trade. But that's the top end of the spectrum in the trade market this year, right? Like that's
that would be high end. Yeah, but I think that's why. Like, I think if you're Kyle Dubas and you do want to make multiple moves, I think you need to look at that soft top tier, like your Jonathan Toews, like your Ryan O'Reilly. Like, if Ryan O'Reilly's already saying he wants to stay in St. Louis,
yeah,
why not say to him, come to Toronto for 1 year?
Well, that's all it would be, anyways. It's a rental, right?
Right. It's a rental.
Like, I mean, you're saying all these things,
right? Like,
this has happened in the NHL before, eh?
Yes.
Where a guy just leaves at the trade deadline. You just like, if you want to go back to St. Louis,
go back
because realistically the Leafs can't offer you $7 or $8 million next year.
But come see if you can win another cup.
Right.
Like, exactly. He would be like, same thing with Jonathan Toews. Like, if you can get a team to eat a little bit of that salary, you know, if Chicago, I think one report had a second round pick or a third round pick.
I believe I read something like that. Yeah.
Right.
And that's so, Chicago understanding that they have to retain 50.
Yeah, they have to retain salary, right? So, like, there are, I think it's going to be on Pridham and Kyle Dubas to work some magic if they do want to make multiple trades. But if you can bring in, like I said, a Jonathan Toews where what's going out still leaves you your Nyes, your Niemelas, your first round pick, maybe there's that extra trade that, you know, you and I, Sergio, haven't even discussed and thought of that can really lift this team, you know, and let's be honest, Kerfoot doesn't work in Toronto, but who say he doesn't work elsewhere? We've seen it, you know, maybe it's just an environment. Maybe it's, you know, now like, and obviously I personally, just based on where he's playing now, I don't see him on this team after the trade deadline. Cause you're not paying what, almost $4 million for someone playing on your fourth line.
Like, oh, he won't be here next year. I mean, he's an understudy.
I don't think he makes it past the deadline.
But like, he shouldn't make it past the deadline.
But I don't think, just given where he's being deployed now, right. I think we're starting to get some hints. Like, I think he gets just enough to be showcased, but not enough to hurt this current roster. Is kind of how. And you know what? To kind of even take it back to Lilligren, I found an interesting stats. So since the start of last season, five players, meaning defensemen, have played more 5-on-5 versus 5 minutes than Liljegren and have a better goals for percentage. Grzelcyk, McAvoy, Toews, Makar, Spurgeon. Out of those five players, three have played more 5-on-5 minutes than Liljegren and have a better goals for percentage. And that's Grzelcyk, McAvoy, and Slavin. So he's producing. That's
two of them playing on Boston right now. Right?
And that's two of them playing on Boston. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I mentioned this in our interview with Rick Five and Mike Wilson, and they kind of appreciated it. I think the one quality about defensemen, and we learned this with Jake he played for the Leafs, Jake Gardner. The one thing that made Jake Gardner such a lightning rod for Kristen was you knew when he was on the ice. So maybe we need to adjust how we look at defensemen. Maybe it's the defensemen that you don't see that bring value, because if they're not making a mistake.
Well, that goes back to what Ant said before, right? And that's Liljegren. It's steady.
It's just, at this point.
Now I'd make an argument though. I'd make an argument that he's got a cannon of a shot, and there is a world that I'd live in that I would love to see Liljegren get an extended look on that first power play because of the shot. Sandin has a pretty reasonable shot too. But Sandin has had tastes on that first power play. Didn't work. Liljegren really hasn't. And I just, and again, it's more out of curiosity than anything.
There's enough games between now and the playoffs. Why not give him a run?
Well, because here's what I think. I think that is a fan wanting to see something. What you have, in my opinion, is a coach that understands his systems very well. And I don't, you know, I'm pretending I'm Sheldon Keefe, right? I don't want to give unnecessary responsibility to this kid who's playing well already, right? And it's important for me to keep him in the range that he's in right now so that come the playoffs, he doesn't really, like, there's nothing else. I don't care. So forget about it. That's where I think that Keefe is.
But I think that it's dangerous, though. But I think for because if you go back to even some of the prospect reports on Liljegren, is he was that offensive player, you know, right. He did do a lot of the wheeling and dealing and, you know, the shot from the point and the,
but do you not see the same thing with Sandin's game? So then I'm going to, so like just to cross in to, you know, like our other kid, but the rope hasn't been released on Sandin either. Right.
No.
So and that's another guy who's supposed to have a tremendously high offensive ceiling. You can see that these two kids are being coached to play in a certain style right now. And I don't think it's a forever thing. Okay.
No, it's a complimentary role to Morgan Riley.
It's just, it's, you've already got one guy who plays careless enough, and Sheldon Keefe has conceded that he's not going to hold Riley back. Just play your game, whatever it is, that's on you. So I can't have two or three guys
doing
playing
the exact
that same style. So we need to create that stability. When people in this city tweet, or I hear on the radio, should the Leafs go out and take a swing and acquire a guy like Chychrun, as an example, in Arizona? And I'm like, why? Just when I have these conversations, I'm like, why? And they're like, well, because he's dynamic offensively and they could use, you know, and he plays with a little bit of tenacity. I mean, I don't view him that much differently in his terms of style from Morgan Riley. And I'm like, but why do you want that guy? Because that guy's likely going to cost you Rasmus Sandin in a trade, undoubtedly, because then you've got nowhere to play Sandin. So you might as well use him as one of the pieces to acquire. And they're like, yeah, I think that's an upgrade. Why is it an upgrade? Well, because he's scoring more offensively. Well, that's because there's no rope on him in Arizona. It's like the Riley thing. Just go and do it. Just go skate. I'm like, if Sandin was given that same opportunity in Toronto, I'd bet you a really good chunk of money that he'd have a lot more points right now. And you'd be looking at him the same way.
And even Liljegren.
Even Liljegren. The fancy stats, when you compare those three guys together, are all very similar, except that the defensive metrics are higher on Sandin and Liljegren.
Yeah, it's structured.
Keith is doing something right.
Keith, it's the structure. So I think the way, and I like Keith's approach with these two guys is, you can't teach what they already know. And they know how to play offense. They know how to skate. They know how to, you know, rush the puck and do all that fancy stuff. And that shows up on the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. But what he's teaching is what they don't know. And that's where, you know, when you look at Timothy Liljegren's progression through the system, is why the Leafs asked him to tweak his style. You know, it's like, focus on defense. The offense will be there. We know you can do it. So let's rein it in. Let's focus on the defensive side of the game, because when I press the button and you go, then you already have that ability or knowledge or instinct to come back defensively if shit hits the fan.
Right.
And and that's what we don't see in Morgan Riley. And a lot of that, I think, does come down to the Leafs organization, how he was developed.
Yeah.
Oh, he was 50, 60 point. Like he's drafted fifth overall, right? Generally, correct. you don't draft stay at home defensemen, right? Like he's drafted for his skill level, and you're finding out over the course of his career at times his skill level is phenomenal.
Yeah,
but he's got bad timing. There's just times when his timing sucks, right? But I mean, again, drafted fifth overall.
But could he have been a different player with Keith than he was with Wilson?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, but that's sure. Maybe he could have been a better two-way hockey player. For sure, right? But that's not – so what Sheldon gets now is how many years has he been in the league now, right? He's like a 10-year defenseman. Well,
he got a veteran player.
You can't teach him all the tricks, right?
No, you can't, right? So, I mean, you can – but, you know, like that's being said, before we, you know, constantly just dump on Morgan, he's been better. He's been a little bit better, no? Right?
Better and, relative.
And at the end of the day, the verdict will be with him, and just like so many guys on this team, what are they doing in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Like I'm sorry, guys, I just can't get out of this narrative, right? Like it's January 26th, it's January 26th, and can April just not come soon enough? And let's just get it. We know who the opponent is.
To the deadline. It's so anticlimactic at this point. Like, we know who they're playing. Like, can we just bypass the rest of these final 30 something games, and let's just get to the Tampa Toronto series.
Let's get to the deadline at least.
The deadline. I want to see what Kyle Dubas does in the next.
Are we cemented in the fact that it's going to be Tampa in the first round? Because I just want to kind of throw it out there. The Sabres are on a little bit of a heater. Could maybe,
That would be fun. I would take Buffalo over Tampa.
I mean, I wouldn't, because I think we're going to lose in the first round regardless, and I'd much rather be to Tampa, not Buffalo. But that's just me and my pessimism at this point.
I don't see Buffalo making up those 8 points.
Right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's fair.
Maybe it's just me. I want to see a repeat because I think Toronto can beat Tampa. I think with enough of an alteration on that bottom six, and that I don't see Tampa as a threat this year. Maybe age is starting to catch up to him. I don't know what it is this year, but.
Well, they've played a lot of hockey. It's three seasons of a lot of hockey. And the fact that they're still pretty relevant, 50 games into
the year. It's scary, no?
No, it's a testament to them. It's a testament to them because the foot was definitely off the pedal to start the season.
Yeah.
But it's a team that knows that when they need to turn it on, they can turn it on. So, the best of Tampa Bay has not been on display yet this year. And I underline yet. I think that switch goes into the on position, game one of the new season, and that's why we keep talking about these things, right?
And I think that's what's so important, right?
Yeah.
And I guess, that adjective that you just used, Sergio, is a player that turns it on when he needs to turn it on. And I kind of want to pivot this conversation out to William Nylander, who has been pretty much lights out goal for goal with Austin Matthews this year. I don't know how much his new visor has to play a role, because I know last year he was mentioning that he was having like migraines and stuff. Maybe there's just a lot. I don't know. I don't know how much migraines and a visor can really impact a player, or maybe we're just seeing a player with a little bit more maturity, but we're starting to see a little bit more of consistency from an offensive perspective. They've used him now on the PK. Kind of want to get your thoughts on Nylander.
He went from having the worst contract in hockey to the best contract in hockey. He's like per dollar. There's, everybody, he's the guy you got to trade because, we can't afford all these guys. And he was the first guy we got to trade. And you know what? I harped on that too. Yeah. I guess that's where you get your depth from, and you know what? Maybe you still do get depth by trading a higher salary. And that's how you actually can revamp this third line. Cause I'm not sure how they do that, but right now at 6.7 per, he's taken a little bit of criticism in the last few days. That Boston game on Saturday, breaking out a little bit too early, that led to a goal. I think the Leafs cynics will still have that attitude of, let's see what he does in the playoffs. But right now, he's playing great, and there's nothing you can say for the most part. My argument is I'm just loving the guy, super skilled, Maybe I know I really like this is maybe irresponsible for me to say, but like, you think Salming passing away just kind of motivated him that much more to put on that jersey and do it for his idol?
That's completely possible. These are things just that saying. You just don't know, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. When I talk to him, we don't really talk hockey. So, he owes me some money, but whatever. It's all good.
He looks a gambler, for
the
most,
yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? But he's just all skill. I mean, so he falls into that narrative, boys. Let's see if he can do it in the playoffs.
But we've seen it from him though in the playoffs. Like, I think that's been the most unfair knock. Right.
He was the best player against the Habs. He was the best
player. And Columbus. And then I think it was almost a toss-up last year against Tampa, no?
Yeah, you're not complaining about the offensive production with Nylander in the playoffs, because that's been there. The narrative is, again, we have four guys, at that top four that don't really go into the gritty areas. And granted, maybe you don't want them to, right? Because I know you do, but I'm trying to play into the narrative, right? So, that's the spot where injuries happen. That's the spot where shit can go wrong. This is why, Edmonton brings in Hyman, to help their centers. This is why Bunting has a role on the first line. Go and fetch the puck, get it to these guys. Yes, I would like to see our best players occasionally also do it, and they don't. So I am definitely on that side of the bandwagon. And that's my knock on Nylander.
I'm just saying, look, that game against Boston was like basically the most hyped game of the year, right? A couple of Saturdays ago. There was a radio station in the afternoon, right? I don't want to name names, but Kiprios and Bourne just went all over him. No, and they went right after him, right? Because, you know, on one of the goals, he leaks out, right? Doesn't stay in the zone. He leaks out, pass gets intercepted. And it led to a goal. And the conversation starts with, you know, as good as he is, and as much as the stats look good and the goals are looking good, man, oh man, is this the guy you want to, like, a play like that is reasons why you don't want to give him an extension. And I'm having this, and I'm listening to it, and I'm going, wow, if a play like that or a loose puck battle, you know, again, this goes back to the playoffs though. If he loses those battles and he leaks out, imagine the amount of analysis and dissection of play that's going to happen to those four guys. Everything's off the table then.
Oh, but it is off the table. Like that we've talked about plenty. Those four guys are not surviving in the same dressing room if these Leafs are out in the first round again. Yeah. Because whoever the incoming GM is at that point. He's going to make a change.
And we don't know. And that's the problem, right? Isn't that the problem?
Yeah.
And like, here's my issue with people when they say that the top four don't go into the dirty areas. William Nylander scored about 75% of his goals last year. And I think a good chunk of them this year, I don't know the number yet, in front of the net. So that's a dirty area. Like before.
Yeah, but it's not the dirty area that we're talking about, Pat.
But see, that's it shifts, right? Like, I don't want a Matthews. Like, same way I don't want Matthews fighting. Like, you see it. That's the commentary. Why doesn't he fight? He's so big. I don't want a guy with a history of concussions and a history of wrist injuries who's our top player, probably what? Maybe a shade lower than McDavid?
Right.
Hurting his wrist in the most pivotal time of the year.
Yeah.
He's hurt now.
Oh, he's been
there's something there, right? So you're right. I don't need him dropping the gloves. You're absolutely right.
But the thing is, then it snowballs that argument, right?
I'm just saying that in the playoffs, something has to happen.
But we don't see it in the playoffs, right? Like, that's one criticism that I think when you look at the Leafs in the playoffs,
right,
isn't warranted. It's like you watch how these series plays out, and it's like
it's not effort; it's execution.
It's a lot of it's execution. A lot of it comes from the in. Like, for me, my concern is, why can't these four guys just figure shit out on the power play?
Yeah.
Where the special teams seem to bottom out.
Yeah. That was a massive area that is often overlooked when we talk about the playoff series of Tampa last year.
Or even Montreal. Special teams against Montreal. They stopped scoring. That's why they lost.
Yeah.
Right?
It's their dynamic. Well, I mean, it hasn't been overly dynamic this year, but like last year, they had number one power play. Going into the playoffs, that power play got shut down by Tampa. Now, part of that, you tip your cap to the opponent, right? But I just still sit there and say, well, geez, man, we had the number one power play going into the playoffs. They couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
One or two more power play goals. And I'm just saying, the series might not be going to seven, right?
But that's the point, right? That's the thing. Like, in that series more specifically, where the others, you could find other areas of concern, like Montreal, after they went up 3-1, it was like it was just the mental gaffes that burned them. Same thing with Columbus. You know, Freddie Anderson letting that goal from this side of the net. Like, you can't have those. But
the Leafs ended up ultimately running into walls, and I mean 100% got out goalied in both the Columbus and the Montreal series. And you pay it to that. The reason why I will really highlight last year's playoffs is because Vasilevsky really didn't show up until game six.
No.
So there was Vasilevsky that we expect to show up until game six.
But he was still beatable though. That's the part. Like, the Leafs were even in game seven.
But he was being beaten.
Yes.
In the other games, but they still couldn't find that next
one extra goal
on the power play. Right. That one that just tips the scale And I think that was an error. And this goes back to everything that we're talking about what are you going to acquire for this team going into this year's playoffs? And why I feel it's important to not dismiss getting a player that is skillful. Because that player, okay, is going to get power play time. Now, it may not be on unit number one, but guess what? It happened a lot in last year's playoffs when the first unit wasn't rolling. They had to go to the second unit, and the second unit really doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
So being able to acquire someone else's legitimate top six player who could then possibly get second line power play duties. And in a game where the first unit isn't working, you have a little bit of legitimacy on the second unit and they find a goal. Now we're talking about that extra production that was missing.
But the other thing is that people don't, I had this argument and I don't know how this doesn't make sense to some. And I'm hoping you guys will understand where I'm going with this. But when you're going for a matchup, and let's just assume you're Cooper, you're planning for the Leafs this upcoming playoffs. It's Leafs Tampa, you know this. If Toronto ices out a third line with either Taves or Ryan O'Reilly, or a definite upgrade on who they have on the third line, and we know that they can score, maybe they get an additional forward and John Kroc drops to the third line. And we've seen him, he can score, you know, in limited minutes with enough talent, he can raise his offensive bar. So now you're looking at this Leafs team that now has 1, 2, 3 lines that can score. And of those top 9 forwards, you're going to see a bunch of them on the 2 power play. How do you coach against that? Like, let's just ignore line 4. That line's not going to score, and hell, I don't want them to. You can stop a goal stopped or one less goal against is just as good as a goal for. But what I need to see, and I think Keith needs to see it as well, are offensive options that if a line's not going, you can pull a Ryan O'Reilly or Jonathan Taves and throw him on that line with Tavares and Nylander. And
yeah, then late become, in the game. Yeah.
And then you become that matchup nightmare, right?
Yeah. In the first podcast of the year that we did together, Pat, you know, I ended it off with go get Patrick Kane. And that's the reason why.
Yes.
Overwhelmed with talent. Overwhelm them with talent. There's just too many guys on this team.
Yeah.
Right? Because you then stick with those four guys and a Morgan Riley on the power play because you look to your bench and go, I really don't have much else.
Yeah.
So give the coach another option. And I'll be honest, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know if they have what it takes to bring in a high impact player. I mean, I know Serge just went off and not liking the guy from Phoenix, or Jacob Chychrun, but I would take him because I would just go with the talent. You know, he takes minutes away from Justin Hall. And on the power play, if you struggle, he would when you struggle. And then you put him in then. When you struggle, you just put him in. Okay.
But Jacob
Chychrun, if I got a right-handed batter in baseball who's not hitting dingers and he's not and he can't, I'm not gonna go to that utility infielder and go, you know what, you go try now. Because I know
I get what you're saying, Ant.
Overwhelm teams with talent, Serge. Overwhelm teams with talent.
But he would not come in here in Toronto and Keith would not look at him and say, the way that you've been playing in Phoenix, continue playing here. The rope is off.
But maybe when your power play goes, maybe when your power play is 0-for-6, and then you really got to do something here. And it can't go 0-for-6 again. It's got
to
be changed.
No, it's got
to
be.
You got to
have a short leash. And the only way you have a short leash, the only way players can ever have a short leash is if you change the guys on the ice.
But that's fine. But that goes back to what Pat said before, though. So then why are we not giving that opportunity? Like, I may understand why Keefe is not right now, but then maybe the true question is why does he not try Liljegren on that top unit power play and see if that booming shot changes the dynamic of how that power play is being played? Because when Morgan Riley's out there, what is every
shots
single
don't
team
get
know?
To the net when Morgan Riley's out there? That's the problem.
He doesn't even try anymore. No. I mean, like, that's the thing.
No,
right?
He's gone to what Mitch Marner was always accused of, pass first.
Yes.
And that takes me to another argument with Marner. Is what's made him so effective this year?
He shoots a little bit more.
And that's why Nylander works. So for all the criticism and all the dumping that people always did on Nylander, that was my one argument when people said, why do you like Nylander more than Marner? It's not that I think that the ceiling's the same, but I kind of like that little bit of selfishness with Nylander, that he is a shot first. And that's why the lanes seem to open up. That's why he was so effective with Matthews, and Matthews started scoring again. That's why he's so effective with Tavares, is he does stuff that Marner doesn't do. And now we're starting to see with Marner, like, I love that goal last night against the Rangers.
Right.
Yeah. It had a moment of that one Ranger defenseman. Like, what were you thinking at one point? But you know, yeah,
but that's
like,
what you get. That's what you get with 3-on-3, right? So like,
right.
You get...
But if we could have, honestly, and we've said this and we've joked online and on this podcast many times, if we could get a player and mix them, a little, half of Marner, half of Nylander, you would have one hell of a great player. Because what everyone dislikes about Nylander, about how he seems to be aloof and doesn't seem to be too harsh and he seems so lackadaisical, that's what makes him so good, is he doesn't care.
Right.
The game one, yeah, of the playoffs is like game one of an 82-game season to this kid.
Yeah, he's got a very unique character. And it's probably, you know, it's probably why, you know,
he's so good here in this market.
Well, I guess, yeah, and
he's perfect for the market.
I have friends that yeah, I've got a real, Igor, I know you're going to listen to this podcast. This is something that you have said, you know, over and over again. William Nylander is perfect for this market based on those things. It's probably why a good chunk of the fan base doesn't like Nylander, why he's so, what's the word? Like, he's so maligned.
Polarizing?
Polarizing, right? It's because, does he care? And it's like, well, it doesn't look like he does. Yeah, but see, but that's the problem, right? I'm so torn on it.
I like it. Like, I'd rather that and know that he won't wilt under pressure. Because what have we seen, honestly, from Matthews and Marner?
Yeah, tears, lots of tears.
But Nylander doesn't wilt under pressure.
I don't say to be an ass, but
the problem with William is that he sometimes drifts.
But Marner does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. I when he
right, but I think a lot of it is Marner, I think a lot of it is narrative driven, right? Like, I think, you know, I think we're willing to give Marner a longer leash because he's on the PK. You know, obviously he has a higher ceiling than Nylander.
Local kid.
But why does the guy that's earning less than $7 million have to play up to a guy that's earning $11 million?
Yeah, it's funny how that works out.
Because he held out.
Yes, they all did, though.
But they all did it, really.
No, but not until like the very last, not till 12 o'clock.
But the
midnight,
problem is with Nylander,
right?
Though, it wasn't Nylander
the entire year.
It was Dewis trying to squeeze him for five.
They caved with Marner. A lot fat, like they did not let the Mitch Marner thing get as far as what Nylander did because of the experience with Nylander, right? So
the thing is, I think the Leafs tried to squeeze Nylander. And based on the report that came from TSN the night that they had announced his contract signing, I think they were holding at 5 or 5.5 up until that last hour.
Right.
And then the Leafs came up. Because, like, let's be honest. You were never going to sign Nylander for less than six. So why was that even a starting point from the Leafs?
There was a conversation on the radio I heard yesterday. Again, it was a local broadcast, but they're talking about it's very, very possible that even a guy like Pasternak makes less than Marner on his next contract.
I don't see it.
Because
I don't
of the
see
culture
it.
And the and the organization.
No,
and
no.
What that team does.
He will sign for 10.
Now
he will sign for 10, or he'll sign for even 88 and 8.
That is
right?
Wishful
thinking. He'll take 11.
That is wishful thinking, okay? On the basis of that culture that was set from the Bergerons and the Marchands, you know, even the Krejcis before. But here's the problem. That culture got kicked right in the nutsack earlier this season when Charlie McAvoy signed for $9.5 million, which was the going rate for every other top defenseman in the league.
But the
McAvoy hasn't even put up the points to justify getting a contract that would basically match what Cale Makar got, right? If I have the numbers right. So that already said that this next gen of contract re-signings in Boston, already that tells you at 9.5, okay, at 9.5, what your that guy is, Pasternak, it like has to soar past that number. Okay?
No, but he has to by the economics and the stats, but not necessarily based on the team and the culture.
But that culture is a lie. And here's why. When you look at when Bergeron and Marchand and even Chara signed their big deals, look what the salary cap was and look at what cap percentage they took. And then watch how the cap rose. Their salary stayed the same, but the salary cap went up. That's not culture. That's salary cap really good. That's having really good luck. Because yeah, are we not looking at the Leafs differently if COVID never hit?
But look, there is a belief that those players took a little bit less.
But they didn't, though. They took the same percentage of Sidney Crosby and Malkin of the cap of the time of their signing. Like, I think they took, what, 10%, 12%?
I don't have it in front of me to even be able to.
Well, Pasternak's at six. He's at 6.5 right now, right?
Well, the Pasternak signing,
and the cap has not gone up in the last couple of years. So
yeah, but the Pasternak contract that he's on right now, coming off of his entry level contract, is turned into a gem, right? Yeah. Because he really,
and that was at the time when the Nathan McKinnons and Mark Scheifele's and right. guys like that were signing those similar deals, right?
Absolutely.
So now it's him. So. I mean, look, again, if we just bring this back to the Leafs, I mean, like, at the end of the day, we're happy with the play of these four, right? We just need to find a way to get.
Correct.
Back to supplemental. It's supplemental scoring, right? Yeah. It's, and I think it shelters them more, right? Like, and that goes back to icing a team that has more offensive depth. Is it allows them to play more freely. Because who are you going to send your best defender out on?
I wish Nick Nurse can coach the Leafs because he would just play those four the entire game and never go to the bench. So there would be no talk of depth at all.
They'd be playing 25 minutes. I don't know, but guys, maybe that's the answer.
Maybe that's the answer in the playoffs, right? I mean, how much is the fourth line going to get anyway? 6 minutes and this potentially revamped third line? I mean, what do we want in this new third line? Like, we keep talking about revamping this third line. Is it a line that they need to be able to score a goal?
I think there needs to be a threat.
A threat of goal, right?
I think there needs to be enough of a threat where, you know, maybe it's like 5 to 10 goals, but you can bank on those 5 to 10 goals. And maybe it comes when, you know, in overtime, heaven forbid this team bloody sucks in overtime. Just give me a fucking overtime goal. But like, because even overtime's in the last three playoffs, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, just give me a goal. Give me that one extra goal. Because then, if the Leafs win even one round, how many of these tired narratives go to die?
Well, I mean, they definitely die a little bit. That's for sure, right? I mean, rest assured, though, in this market, even if they win one round, we're going to start moving the goalposts.
We'll move the goalposts.
Pat, the mission for this team has to be to compete for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You have probably the most dynamic offensive players that this team has ever had in its history. And I understand it's very, very difficult to compare eras and generations. Rick Vive was, you know, a phenomenal scorer.
Gary Lehman was phenomenal
for a couple of years. Non-playoff teams. And that's not taking anything away from them. I mean, Ballard did nothing to support those teams, right? So, I mean, that guy was like anti-spending money. But, you know, Gilmore put up, you know, a couple of really, really big offensive seasons in his era. But when you look at Matthews, you look at Marner in specific, those two guys, you are talking about a dynamic offensively that, like, again, it just goes back to, like, I don't think has ever been seen.
No,
in
we
this
haven't
franchise's
seen it.
History. The no. goal is, I mean, this isn't saying, it's not the cliche, well, the goal for everybody's got to be the Stanley Cup. There's only a finite amount of teams that can truly compete for the Stanley Cup every year. And this team at this point just has to figure out how to clear that little speed bump that they seem to run into every year that they just can't get over.
Yeah.
And if they can't get over it this year, rest assured, shit is going to be dismantled. And we will look back on this 5-6 years from now saying, oh, man, you know, like that was.
Is there a team that compares to the Leafs in the years in the past? Like, I'm like off the top of my head, I think the San Jose Sharks, right? Great regular seasons, but they don't come to in the playoffs. But San Jose didn't necessarily always lose in the first round.
No.
Right.
That's kind of where we're at now, right?
That's kind of where we're at with Toronto.
I guess we're kind of like, is this like the Ottawa Senators back in the day where they had this great record and then they just couldn't beat the Leafs?
I think the Leafs can't beat the Leafs. Like, I think this is a unique situation. It's not like, you look at, once again, we go back to the Columbus Montreal series. Those two teams didn't beat Toronto. Toronto beat Toronto.
Yeah. Well, in those two series in particular.
Right.
Yeah.
And then last year, it was a toss up. Game seven. You know, does that pick get called in any other playoff game? Probably not.
It's very important, and I know you're going to use this as a segue. So when we look at the things that we want to enhance this team's chance to get there, the other thing that we can't dismiss is, and we've talked about it many a times, is the fact that the Leafs goalies of the past have not shown up in those big games to give them that one big save that the opposition goalie was really good at. And this year, things can change. The only difference is right now at game 50, the guy who's kind of taking the lead in net is not the guy that I kind of expected to be having this conversation of, because I was more about getting the two-time Stanley Cup winner ready to go. Now I'm sitting there saying, if Samsonov can continue running and figure out how to play on the road too, maybe. I mean, it's hard to forecast it's going to happen 32
but I
like games.
But once again, I can't argue with how the goalies are being deployed.
Not right now, no.
Not at all.
Right? Like,
yep.
Next man up. And you know what? You know what? Speaking to your point, Sergio, when Matt Murray comes back into that net, we're going to get Matt Murray that we saw at the start when he came back from that injury. You want to know why?
We'll see. By the way, I'm predicting he's going to be in net tomorrow night. So
no, they have him against Ottawa. I think there's their pencil. Oh, tomorrow is Ottawa. Jeez, yeah, I got my whole week confused.
Yeah, earlier this week when I looked at the schedule, I'm like, no matter what happens with Samsonov, I said, I think he's going to play Ottawa. Murray on Friday night.
But then once again, like, I don't see a problem when there's competition. You know what I mean? Like, nope. I think it forces both to be better. I think that's why both have been better this year. I think both have excelled in a very structured Leafs defense, because that's very underrated. For as much as we talk about just the issues with Justin Hall and the issues of Morgan Rielly, as a unit and as a team, they've been one of the best defensive teams. So they've really helped at times really isolate these goalies. I like the way they're being deployed. I run with the hot hand, and that should apply in the playoffs. Whoever's playing well come game one, that's who gets the net, and have at it. And if it's not Matt Murray, it's not Matt Murray. But Matt Murray didn't do too bad coming in relief in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You know what? And maybe I don't focus on that enough. But in both instances, in both cup runs, he came on in relief of Fleury and took them, you know, took them to win the Stanley Cup, both of them. So, you know, maybe
there's nothing wrong with plagiarizing a script.
No.
Well, maybe that's the script, right?
This is the one.
Murray, you can't start in the playoffs, but you're going to come in relief and you're going to take us to the promised land. Got to get
past. But I want both hungry. Like, I think that's where I'm at. I want both wondering who's getting the net the next game.
Absolutely. Undeniable.
Okay. So, Pat, I found it interesting that after they lost to Montreal, and it wasn't Samsonov's fault that he got the start for the next one because they have such a platoon system. So my argument is that Keith is now out looking for a number one goalie, or he's at least looking for someone who can take the reins and go for a bit of a run. And I don't disagree with that at all. I don't think, though, I want a goalie going into the playoffs who has to look over his shoulders. I don't want him thinking. I want him thinking that this is his series. Doesn't have to be, but I want him thinking that.
But doesn't that come from production?
Sure, absolutely.
Right, like I and I think that's been the issue in Toronto when Frederick Anderson and Jack Campbell were here, right? With Jack Campbell, like, mind you, Mrazek didn't do himself any favors last year, so it kind of defaulted to Campbell. Like, right. No competition, right? But I don't. And the one thing that, you know, the more I read about Matt Murray and the more I looked at, you know, what made him so successful in Pittsburgh, and even when he played in the Sioux, you know, it was competition that made him raise his bar. Because there was a time in the Sioux where Jack Campbell stole his job.
That's fine. Yeah. No, right? That's good. So I'm just saying
Matt Murray likes to play with a chip on his shoulder.
I'm just saying the last 10 games of the year, I'm hoping someone has played seven or eight of them.
By then, I'm assuming we'll know who's getting game one by that point.
So what did you say, Ant, for the last, but what was that
say
exactly?
Say for the last 10 games of the season.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if one of them has played 7 or 8. And I don't want there to be a debate going into the playoffs. I don't want there to be a debate on game one.
Yeah.
Who should have taken that net?
Right.
Don't know if it affects the goalies. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, but you know what? That debate's going to exist anyways, because if they play game one and they get smoked 5-1, who are we going to put it on? Oh, well, we chose
the... Right, but at the start of the game, I don't want there to be any doubts, right? That game one starter in baseball, I want that I want that number one goalie, right? Because they are, if it is Tampa, man, they're going up against the guy. There's no debate who their goalie is.
Yeah.
No, there is not.
No. But that's but then that goes back to needing more offense to push that goalie.
Can I ask you guys a question just kind of out of the box here? Because, and I know he hasn't scored in 16 games, and I know we keep talking about, you know, the third line, blah, 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 blah. Is there any interest in a reunion with Mikheyev in Vancouver?
I don't like him. No
how
playoff.
Do carry,
no.
How do you, yeah, how do you carry, but more so, if you're going to acquire that player, how do you carry that contract beyond this season?
Yeah. And I don't like his playoff performance. He flamed out in the playoffs. Like, I think for a season that's so pivotal for this franchise,
right,
to leave, to break. I had this same thing. You know, I was mentioning to Sergio offline, you know, I found myself in a Twitter conversation, and someone suggested that the Leafs should trade Alexander Kerr for Nick Bjorstad out of Arizona. So I looked at Bjorstad's playoff performance, 5 points in 15 games. So what you're saying is we trade Kerfoot for Kerfoot.
Kerfoot has a no movement clause, right? There's 10 teams on that trade list that he can deny trade.
I'm sure at this point, if enough happens, I think he might even be seeing some of the writing on the wall. Like this season.
But it doesn't mean he's going to accept a trade to Arizona. He doesn't have to. He might.
No. I'm saying you find.
Raise his own value for next year.
I'm saying you find a team that he feels comfortable with, or that's willing to eat some of his salary, and you make it happen. And I just don't like Mikheyev. Like I you just go backwards again. Like we've seen what he can do.
I get the idea of why we're bringing up this name. Obviously, Vancouver is going to make some changes, but that's just there's nothing there with Mikheyev, in my opinion. So, I don't see any value in that particular player.
Mind you, like if we're going to go back, if Connor Brown was in perfect health, I think there would be a case to bring a Connor Brown back, because I think he offers he scores, he offers a little bit of those intangibles. I think he's great on the bench. Like, he would have been a great player. Like, if we're going to look back at ex-Leafs, I legit think, like, I'm looking at Vancouver, I'm looking at Chicago. Who else? Like, maybe even St. Louis, because I think, you know, at some point they just need to figure out who they are this year. And if I'm Kyle Dubas, why not make a call to Ryan O'Reilly and say, hey, I know you really want to go back to St. Louis next year, but can we make this year work?
That's the name that comes up most often, right? From what I hear, in terms of, I mean, I've seen a lot of fantasy trade options. There was an article today about what a Patrick Kane trade from the Leafs would look like. And the article actually kind of runs out of steam, almost acknowledging that the Leafs don't really have what it takes, because there's just too much salary retention and they don't have the prospects.
I think there's enough in the Leafs pool.
But eventually you get outbid. That's, I guess, kind of
the salary retention issue with Kane is the same that it would be with Tapes, where it's going to ultimately require three teams, because those guys are $10.5 million contracts. So Chicago's got to retain 50, and a third team has to get involved to keep another 25%.
But the problem is, and here's my issue with the salary cap, and when it's mentioned with the Leafs, all the contenders are within $1 million of the cap ceiling. Where are these guys going?
Yeah, well, 27 teams are like within $2 million of the cap ceiling.
Yeah, right? That's why you haven't seen a trade yet at all now.
But it's, that's the point, right? So
it's
like
tough.
So this whole dynamic of a hard salary cap has made trades complicated for every team.
Very. Very. Well, the flat cap that's happened here in the last few years because of
COVID.
Escrow and COVID and having to pay these players and all of this stuff. I mean, like, this is what has hindered the league from moving forward. You look at, I mean, just go on Cap Friendly and just take a look at the number of teams that are spending well into the high 80s, into the 90s, like $90 million on their salary this year. Granted, with, you know, LTIR and all those things coming in.
There's four teams in the 90s, right? But you're looking at 50% of the team is of the league is over the cap. So it's not a hard cap.
Well, it's not a hard cap because of LTIR. But what the point that I'm trying to make is that this is, you're in a league right now that can definitely support a higher cap. Had COVID never happened, we would have been in the 90s.
Or 100 millions at one point. There was projections.
Yeah. Yeah, on the basis of, you know, Seattle having completed 1 year, which they did last year, those additional revenues would have possibly pushed the cap.
Revenues and the new TV contracts in the books. This week's podcast, did you see the news out of the States with that one sports channel having to it's completely shut down. I forget the name of the sports channel, but it might actually start to affect the NBA, MLB, and the NHL. What's the name of the sports channel that just collapsed in the States?
I know Newsmax collapsed.
Now I want to hear who it is. So we're gonna have like this uncomfortable silence in the podcast. We want to know.
And I think Anthony's looking it up as well.
Trying to find it.
Oh, where was it? It was like all over the news, and people reported it might even impact the NBA, MLB.
Well, NBC Sports, but that was a couple of years ago. Nothing.
Yeah, there was one.
It
was an American channel.
I don't feel like that. I didn't really.
As long as ESPN and TNT are fine.
Well, definitely is not going to be TNT. So as Pat continues to look this up, we've got Ottawa and the Washington Capitals on Friday and Sunday night. A couple of odd nights for Leaf games, Ant, to have a Friday night game and a Sunday night game, both at home, no less. I'm interested.
That's got to do with the All-Star break, though, right? Kind of sneaking in another game before the break.
Is it? I mean,
I would assume.
And you're putting a 5 p.m. start. The NHL thought it would be wise to put a 5 p.m. start on a game against the Capitals on NFL championship weekend.
Sunday?
Yeah, like I would have probably avoided all games
it won't matter.
On a Sunday.
No, I know it doesn't. It won't matter. It doesn't matter.
That's just.
The Leafs are good for a couple million every night, right? Like 1.5 million.
Listen, so like while we give Pat the breather to be able to try to find this, what are
your that's it. Just found it. Bali Sports Network.
Who?
It was a network out of the States, and they're doing a $8.6 billion debt restructuring, and it's causing them to it's going to cause like a fairly. Yeah. Oh, geez.
They were broadcasting.
It's a betting site, isn't it?
So I'm trying to figure out how this affects
it's a regional sports broadcaster, right? We're assuming it's a regional sports broadcaster. So you probably have some teams, whether it be in the NHL or in the NBA, who have signed regional deals with these teams, right? Because you got to remember that too. It's not always just a national broadcaster, right? Like it is in Canada where Sportsnet and TSN are both the national and the regional.
And it's some big states that are impacted by this.
But most of these teams are making a lot of money, much more on the regional than they get on their share of the pie on a national broadcast.
Well, in baseball, especially. Tons of regional. Well,
depending on the ramifications of this, absolutely. This could be this could be huge.
Based on one article that I just found, it says in total, Sinclair, who owns Bali, owes $55 billion in sports media rights. A bankruptcy could put payments to the NBA and NHL at risk. It's being reported that Sinclair will skip a $140 million interest payment due in mid-February. It's going to shift.
Oh, God.
And then when you look at the map of which they serviced, like you're looking at all of Florida, which includes the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, nobody watches those games anyway, so that's okay.
And then you go to Texas, and you have the Dallas Stars.
Dallas, yeah.
The Ducks are impacted by this. Minnesota Wild are impacted by this. St. Louis, it appears. I can't tell by some of these logos. They've really been shrunk down. Columbus. Yeah,
see, a lot of these teams too, because Fox didn't get the national. Because Fox didn't get the national rights, I think a lot of the FS1, they dropped. They dropped a lot of NFL. They dropped a lot of NHL teams.
And something that hasn't been spoken about here in Canada from a sporting landscape is Rogers has lost their pants on this last NHL deal.
Big time. One of the worst investments probably in history when you look
So the argument is, hold on, there's and I don't necessarily disagree, but it's one of the reasons why they lost their pants is the Leafs keep losing in the first round.
But that's part of it.
Yeah. But you know, for me, the godfather of broadcasting in this country, John Shannon. I listened to him quite a bit with
he's the godfather not McCown?
No, on the business of broadcasting. And Shannon is adamant that that's just not true at all. It looks like that, but it's not true at all. I would love to deep dive into that. Yeah. No, I would that they have not lost as much as people think.
But
just not the case.
Rogers has made a tremendous amount of cuts. One would believe largely in part to that. Right.
Sure. Now I'm just saying the bleeding isn't as bad as people think. That's
but
all.
What I think, that's I what, think what
and
needs
I don't
to happen,
speak for Shannon. Look it up.
But yeah. I think what would happen is, and if there's going to be some restructuring, because I think because the NHL is, if there's one thing that I dislike about the NHL is how gate driven it is and how heavily reliant it is on.
That's not their fault though. Like, what can they do about that? People
better marketing, going to the Olympics, finding other markets. Like, why are we still trying to salvage the Florida Panthers, the Arizona Coyotes?
Like, marketing is a big, big aspect marketing, of that. Now, branding, part of that is really, really bad luck, though, in terms of, well, let's talk about who the most marketable players are. A couple of them play in Canada and one of them plays in the West Coast, which really doesn't help, you know, what is largely driven by a Eastern time zone audience, right? You're not getting me to stay up late on a consistent basis to watch Connor McDavid. The NHL, I can tell you right now, is shitting their pants. I promise you that this conversation is happening at least weekly, if not biweekly, in NHL head offices, is the fact that when they look at the bottom of the standings and who's going to have high percentage chance, they are praying hell and high water that Chicago probably wins the lottery this year to get Connor Bedard there, and they would cry if San Jose or Anaheim
or Montreal,
another West Coast team. No, Montreal would be perfectly fine. It doesn't even matter that it's Canadian. It's Eastern. And the NHL can push that, right? If they so choose. I mean, Austin Matthews should be on more American broadcasts, not because he plays for the Leafs, because he's an American player. And they should know how to market that. They suck at that. But they
TBS,
definitely do.
How many games has TBS shown of Connor McDavid this year? Take a guess. I heard this today. Take a guess. How many games has TBS broadcasted?
I think maybe 10.
Three.
Seven.
Mm. Wow.
And they were praised for it by the conversation that I heard today, because at least they're not hiding from a Canadian market.
Well, but I think, but some of it's too is product, right? Find me a sport that denigrates its product on its biggest stage in the playoffs.
Yeah. You go to those stupid beards.
It's the clutching and the grabbing. It's the lack of offense.
You're absolutely right. But somehow they got to find a way to.
Why are we still discussing?
You got to find a way to market this team. You have to find a way to market the league. You're right. You're right there. You're right there. That the person that they're given, right? These kids are taught from their days in the OHL, you know, in the Western Hockey League, like how to just answer a question by basically saying nothing. So the league lacks a certain personality. And then when someone tries to show some, they get dumped on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. All the Tortorellas of the world and guys like that.
And here's
that
the other thing
it.
That bothers me with the NHL. And it goes to our blog that got released today before we wrap up today's podcast about officiating that, you know, our teammate Ed wrote. Officiating just discredits the NHL.
Oh, big time.
Because what else drives a sport? Gambling. If you're a fucking degenerate gambler, no offense to gamblers, you're not degenerates, but if you're a gambler you can't trust that the referee is going to, that Bob is going to ref the same way as Jeff in this next game and the same way as Mike in the next game.
Yep.
You're not watching the sport.
Yeah, there's a major lack of consistency. But and look, I mean,
but gambling drives sport, right?
Every sport struggles with its officiating. This isn't a problem that's exclusive to the NHL. However, and I'm going to highlight this, no other sport watches its officiating and its rules get skewed from game 83 and on. It is a different set of rules that are played with in the playoffs than that of which has been played with in the 82 games preceding it. And it happens exclusively in the NHL. Because in the NFL, when you get to the playoffs, it's the same bullshit calls that were being called in the regular season. And the NBA, nothing changes. The star gets into the key, he's going to get a foul. It's the same thing. And in baseball, the umpires suck at balls and strikes just as much in the playoffs as they do in the regular season. In hockey, everything that they have been coached on, called penalties on during the regular season, gets thrown out the fucking window when the playoffs start. And it has been complained about and it has been confusing for every coach in this league for years and decades now, not understanding why it is two different sets of rules in the same calendar year for the same plays. Why is it a penalty in the regular season and not in the playoffs?
But here's a question for you. It starts in the regular season.
Okay.
Because what's the constant topic we discuss in every game? Game management.
Okay.
If the game is tied or it's 2-1, are you anticipating a penalty happening within the last minute?
Nope. They put the whistles away. In those close games? But in the playoffs, they seemingly put the whistles away all the time.
But here's the funny thing. You'll hear from the NHL, we don't want our referees impacting the game. By you not making that call, haven't you just impacted the game?
Yeah.
You're telling me that what happened to Gilmore 93 didn't impact the series?
Absolutely.
You're telling me that clutching and grabbing we saw in the series against Tampa, where there's clear still shots of Matthews being ridden like a horse?
Yeah.
Clutching and grabbing, and it's pure clutching and grabbing, or the phantom high stick call didn't impact the game?
Or an interference, taking a goal back, and then watching video this year of probably 15 similar plays.
More erroneous. But even in the same series, I forget who it was on Tampa, did almost the exact same pick on Morgan Riley.
Yeah, yeah.
No. I think the league falls in love with this idea that the playoffs do change the game and that the first round is this, you know, entertaining style of hockey and guys just giving it their all and doing everything they got to do to win. What happens with that argument, what changes in that narrative, is by the time you get to the finals, you've got two exhausted teams. And it's not just because it's a hard championship to win. It's because, you know, you've allowed all this extra beatdown to go on.
Right.
Right?
It diminishes the product. It
diminishes the product, 100%.
Yeah. That's been my biggest beef. And you guys have heard me and see me in our group chat. What do I always say? The issue with the refereeing isn't a Leafs problem. So I know, because I want to get it back, because we are a Leafs blog or in podcast. It's an NHL problem. I don't think the NHL and its refereeing, seeing how piss poor they are smart enough to conspire. It's like waiting for Curly Leary and Moe to conspire.
No, it's an NHL problem. It's an NHL problem. 100% NHL problem. Yeah.
NHL problem, not a Leafs problem, not a Colorado problem, not a Florida Panthers problem. It is a league-wide problem. Because you go to each fan base is Twitter chats, and what do you see?
Yeah, you're always going to see conversation about the referee.
Oh, the referee, the referee played this team better, or referee eased up on this team. And here's the other thing that pisses me off. How was it in last year's playoffs against Tampa? I believe it was it game 5 or game 6 that Tampa had 6 power plays to the Leafs 3?
It was one of those games, yeah. Yeah.
So the Leafs essentially played almost a full period, one man down.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So almost a full period.
Yep.
But we don't want to impact the result.
No, we don't, Pat. No, we don't want to impact the results.
We don't want to impact the results.
That's the biggest frustrating part about this sport.
Podcast, though. On a side note, we started really high with our compliments. It has really devolved back and gone backwards to complete criticism of the league. It's kind of funny.
We're Leaf fans. True,
we're Leaf fans. We're truly bitter at the end. We start bitter
at the end. Yeah,
exactly. We get that last dig in before we can.
Of course.
This has been a fun chat, chat, guys. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this week's podcast?
No, I'm gonna echo. I'll just finish it on what we said before. I would like to see the continuing of running with a goalie. Outside of a Samsonov injury or a pair of really, really bad performances. I like the fact that Keith has dug into the thinking of let's give an extended run here. Cause I'd like to see him win some games on the road too, because clearly unbeatable at home, right? So
14-0-2, I think, or
14-0-1, I think. 13-0-1 or 14-0-1. Yeah, he's on a hell of a run playing at Scotiabank Arena this year.
Now, here's a suggestion before I'm going to throw this to Anthony first, and Sergio, you give me your thoughts. What if the Leafs played Samsonov at home and Murray on the road in the playoffs?
Yeah, I've heard that.
gimmick.
It's a gimmick.
Imagine you play the odds, you play the numbers, and see how it works out?
I don't know that anyone will have ever done that in history, but...
Nope.
You can do it in baseball. Right, yes. you can put two guys just based on the other team if he's a lefty or righty. But right. I don't know if you do that in hockey.
But
why not? Try anything at that point, right?
At this point,
if you're down 2-0.
But we know the team definitely uses analytics. No better analytics than results, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is true. That is true.
I guess, Anthony, now for yourself, any final thoughts or?
You know what? I'd like to see Alex Kerfoot actually score a few goals. Can he get maybe a couple on Friday and a couple more on Sunday? Because we've got him going to every single team as a trade. He's in every trade. And really, doesn't he have
to be salary balance, before, right?
Doesn't he have to do something before we trade him? Cheering for him.
Come
on, let's go.
Can we bribe the guy that does the scorecards and just give goals to Kerfoot? Like, look at this guy. He's on fire.
Just credit it to him.
I would love to hear, goals scored by Kerfoot, assists by Engvall and Hall. Let's go.
That's funny. That is funny.
Now, if that played into a series playoff win, that would be one of the best scenarios you could ever see. And that would be so Leafy, wouldn't it?
Oh, that'd be very Leafy. Very Leafy.
And I guess just for me, my final thoughts is I just want to see where if there's one thing I'm going to be working on an upcoming trade rumor trade blog. If there's one thing that you can expect from Kyle Dewis and Brandon Prinham is the unexpected. So we've bandied about multiple different names and how they would play into this roster for the playoffs. But I think I really do think that it's really going to come down to Kyle Dewis and how much reign he really has on this team and how much pull. Because we know he's on a lame duck contract. And actually, that's maybe we save that for another conversation, is how much real strength and ability to make those type of decisions with this roster if he's not going to be around next year. But I see him making this sneaky trade. And I can't shake it. He's proven it. And I guess February is going to be made even more interesting because of it. So Kyle Dubas likes to do his work early, so.
That's what I'm anticipating, so we shall see for sure.
We shall see. Gentlemen, this has been fun. Listeners, it has been great. Definitely check out Ed's blog on the NHL officiating. There's a lot of really good insight. It will be a two-parter. Thanks again, everyone.